And now, in conversation with the boyhood heroes who became his broadcasting colleagues, this is My Radio 1 with Sean
Tilley. From its launch in 1967, right through the 70s to the mid-80s, BBC Radio 1 was probably the world's biggest music station. In this series, I'm introducing you to many of the people behind the network's success during those golden years, as they each tell the story of their Radio 1. Sean
Tilley. My Radio 1.
Now, this next guest is not only a great friend of mine, we've known each other since I was a boy broadcaster, in fact, but can you believe this? As we sit in the studio right now, he has just celebrated his 60th anniversary on the air. Even more impressive when you consider that he doesn't even look 60.
David Hamilton, you get ready, better get set to go.
Welcome to the show. Good afternoon and welcome to the show. Good afternoon and welcome
The record stuck.
Good afternoon and welcome to the show.
The record stuck. The record stuck. The record stuck. The record stuck.
Radio 1. Good afternoon.
Ah, dear. We come out with these little gems from time to time, don't we? Good afternoon. Welcome to the midweek edition. David Hamilton Show underway with Elvis Presley.
My goodness, what a creative little buddy you were. DH, you're very welcome.
Sean, thank you very much for having me on your excellent series.
So, David, considering that you were on the Light programme right up until the very end, given the fact that you were still in your 20s, you must have been a little bit miffed not to be in that original Radio 1 photo on the steps of All Souls Church.
I actually had two programmes on the last day of the BBC Light programme. I had Housewives' Choice in the morning, and I had Music Through Midnight at night.
We play lots of top tunes on Music Through Midnight on Friday nights and Saturday mornings, and right now we're going to play BBC Top Tune Number 1. If you're wondering what exactly makes a number 1 top tune, I think it's probably the sort of song that anyone can easily sing himself or herself. Here's a song that just about everybody seems to be singing right now, and it comes from Engelbert Humperdinck.
The following day was the launch, and I was very disappointed not to be part of it. I think maybe I was part of the team that had been the sort of scripted broadcast that we had on the Light programme, and that was how I was seen. And my first series for Radio 2 was The Golden Sounds of Frank Chaxfield. And although I liked Frank very much, his music was aimed at people probably in their 80s, and as you said, I was still in my 20s. So I had to wait until November 1967 to get my first programme on Radio 1, and that was Family Choice, which was what Housewife's Choice had become.
Well, a nice, well-deserved round of applause there for the Spinners at the Philharmonic Hall in Liverpool and John Peel. And we played that track from their LP Folk at the Phil, especially for some folk in Liverpool, including Dorothy Turner.
And there were, you know, a string of presenters that were on that programme. Alan Freeman was doing it occasionally, Sam Costa, even Vince Hill, Pete Murray. And yourself, what do you remember about those very early days?
Well, Family Choice, you did a week, and it was a request programme. I think it might actually have been produced by Radio 2, but simultaneously broadcast on Radio 1. The problem with doing a programme like that is you can get typed on it, you know, and people think that's what you want to do. And so in time, I managed to live that down, and Radio 1 asked me to do some Radio 1 clubs.
Desmond Dekker and the Aces played live today. Your producers were Johnny Beerling and Don George. You made Mad Roscoe, served up the sounds, and of course, David Diddy Hamilton was visual as well as vocal. Bye, David.
Bye. Take care.
And Radio 1 was such a powerful station. I really wanted to be part of it. Such an exciting time. You remember that the Pirates had been outlawed. BBC was told we have to replace them with a music station. And it wasn't that simple because Radio 1 had a lot of needle time problems, and that meant that they could only play so many records. They had to have live music that was done done either by BBC orchestras or by groups coming into the studio and doing cover versions of their hits. And you know, the problem is when a record is made, it probably is done very painstakingly. It takes quite a lot of time to just go into a BBC studio and Maida Vale and do that song in one take. It's never going to sound quite the same. So they were quite difficult times for Radio 1 and Radio 2. And there was the word that comes up so often is compromise. There was a compromise between what people wanted and what they were given.
Mrs. Monica Hamilton, who is no relation, I assure you, lives at Letton Close, Blandford in Dorset, and would like to have a piece of music played tonight, a very particular piece of music, actually, from the film The Adventurers. And she's written me some very interesting things about the Hamilton tartan, and says, do I have the Hamilton tartan, and do I have the hunting tartan? Well, I don't have the hunting tartan, because it is a little wild, as you say, Monica, but I do have the other one. It looks very, very handsome indeed, the Hamilton tartan tie. And so from one member of the clan, as it were, to another, we have a number from the film The Adventurers, and it's called Cortugai.
Some very odd programmes in those days. For instance, Joe Loss had a show on Radio 1, which would see him with the likes of Amen Corner or Lulu, maybe Jimi Hendrix popping up there, Marmalade, and you were introducing that sometimes.
I did introduce some of the Joe Loss shows. Again, Joe was a very affable man, lovely, lovely man, and he had his singers who were Rose Brennan and Ross McManus. And Ross McManus, of course, was the father of Elvis Costello, who is Declan McManus. And then it was a hybrid program, really, because one minute you were listening to the orchestra, and then the next minute one of the pop groups of the day would come on. So it was neither fish nor fowl, you know.
David Hamilton.
Yes, afternoons are fun on one with David Hamilton.
4th of June 1973. Do you remember what happened on that day?
Well, that was the last Radio 1 schedule before commercial radio began in the UK. The first two commercial radio stations, which were Capital and LBC, were due to launch in October. And the last schedule before that happened to try and hang on to the audience that radio, the monopoly that Radio 1 had had, was Noel Edmonds on breakfast, Tony Blackburn in the morning, Johnny Walker at lunchtime, and me in the afternoon. And Tony and I were the first people to have three-hour daily shows on Radio 1.
And today's romantic message begins, Dear Dave, for a while now, I've done an early morning paper round. On the first day, as I was coming out of the side gate of number 18B, I noticed the postman stop opposite. And thinking that it was the usual one, I waved and called hello, and he turned and smiled. And as he turned, and I took in his gorgeous blonde hair and fantastic tinted goggles, I came to the conclusion this was not the usual postman.
It did very well, and it led to a whole new world for me, because all of a sudden I was in demand at discos, which were fairly new at that time, and we would be out and about. I mean, I would be doing discos probably three nights a week. Initially, I would be in Aberdeen one night, I'd be in Plymouth the next night, Newcastle the night after that. And as I made contacts, I thought, actually, it makes more sense to do three in a row, say, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, in the same area. So I would perhaps do Liverpool, Manchester and Bolton. But in those days, the BBC didn't pay very much money, and the money was actually earned in the gig. So in one night in a gig, you could earn what Radio 1 paid you in a week.
Hey there, David.
I am here, Paul, and I'm one today.
You're 1 year old today.
It's my birthday.
What happened then? Is that the programme, is it?
Yeah, yeah. Terrific. We've been going one whole year today.
You've been celebrating, haven't you?
And they said it wouldn't last. Yeah, yeah, we've been celebrating. Yes,
bottles of milk, no doubt.
Little bottle of milk, and we're going to have another bottle of milk at 3 o'clock. So if you're around, you might like to join us.
Oh, terrific, David. Congratulations once again, and here's to another year.
Thank you very much indeed, Paul.
Bye.
See you tomorrow.
Bye.
I think almost when I started on Radio 1 with The Daily Show, I was then offered a breakfast show on BBC World Service. So, you know, and then voiceovers on commercials, stuff was just coming at you, because Radio 1 was such an enormous station.
There were some really memorable features during that programme each day as well. For instance, Tea at 3.
Tea at 3, we had a wonderful jingle, Everything Stops for Tea, and it was done by Mud.
If you're slaving all alone or relaxing, or you're working in a noisy factory, just set yourself free when the clock strikes three. as everything stops for tea.
Right, it's a Monday afternoon tea break, selected by Joy Edwards. Hello, Joy.
Yeah, a lot of people wondered who that was. It didn't sound like Mud at all, but it was...
No, it didn't, did it?
Les Gray and Mud, who very kindly did that for us. And you know, a lot of artists would do jingles especially for us. And I've got some terrific ones in my collection now. Pilot, who are one of the bands that I championed in the early days.
Ho, 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 it's magic!
Was Magic by Pilot, who very kindly did that for us. That was their first hit. It was a Hamilton Hotshot. That's what I called my records of the week, Hamilton Hotshots. One of the thrills of being a DJ at Radio 1 was discovering new talent. And one of the other jobs that I did was I was the voiceover on Sunday night at the London Palladium when it came back in the 70s. And I was sitting in the stalls watching rehearsals, and three girls came out and sang a song called Year of Decision. And they were the 3 Degrees. And it was about the time that Diana Ross and the Supremes, she'd left the Supremes. And I thought these could be the new Supremes. They were not Motown. They were Philly. They were Philadelphia. So the next morning, I said to Paul Williams, my producer, what is our record of the week? And he told me. And I said, can we change it? He said, why? So I said, did you see the Palladium show last night? He said, no. So I said, well, millions of people did. And they will have seen and heard the 3 Degrees singing this song, Year of Decision. It's a great record. He said, let me listen to it. So he listened to it and he said, yes, I like it. So at the last minute, we changed it. Year of Decision went on to be a nice big hit. And the follow-up was When Will I See You Again, which once again, of course, we made a Hamilton Hotshot. That went to number one in about 25 different countries. It was a multi-million seller. I think it sold over 5 million copies around the world. And when it had sold the million, Philadelphia Records said to me, would you go to the Apollo Victoria and present the girls with a gold disc? So I said it would be a pleasure. So there they were with the band in concert, and I waited in the wings for the cue, and I walked out with the gold disc under my arm, and I said to the audience, ladies and gentlemen, I am here to tell you, When Will I See You Again has sold a million. The place erupted. I gave the gold disc to Sheila Ferguson, and I went off, the band struck up, and I stood in the wings with goose pimples because I thought I have been part of their story. Mm. How fantastic was that? Later, of course, Prince Charles famously danced with Sheila Ferguson, and he said, it's 3 Degrees are my favourite group. And I said, yes, but I found them first.
Is that right? Tell me the story about making Bohemian Rhapsody a Hamilton hotshot.
Well, when Bohemian Rhapsody came out, it was very long, of course. I think it was about 6 minutes. Mm. And nobody really wanted it as a record of the week. And some people didn't like it that much. And I think along with Paul Williams, my producer, I think we listened to it and said, it's almost symphonic. It's something, it's so different. So we had that as a Hamilton hotshot.
International Rescue, Lady Penelope speaking.
Hi there, Penny. Jeff here. We've got a hot one for you.
Ready and waiting, Jeff. May I have details?
Sure thing, Penny.
It's David Hamilton's Hot Shot.
Preview of the record that hopefully will be our record of the week starting next Monday, Queen and Bohemian Rhapsody.
That was obviously your most successful record of the week, and it wasn't very long after Bohemian Rhapsody topped the chart that Warwick Records brought out your very own Hot Shots album.
It was quite funny because record companies that have been so keen to have a Hamilton Hot Shot were not so keen to have their songs played on a compilation album. However, we did finish up with some really good ones. We finished up with the Doobie Brothers, Listen to the Music, which I used for a long time as a hook at the start of the show. I mean, it was a great opening jingle. I took the main hook of it and very often open my shows with it. And we had Eric Clapton on there, the Bee Gees, Barry White. So, and I did television advertising for it. And with television advertising, at that time, compilation albums were included in the chart. And we got to, I think it was about number 13 in the top 20. So I actually had a top 20 album. How much of a thrill is that?
We're talking about all these things that you did every day on the show. Have a listen to this.
It's David's Daily Dolly.
So it's an era of beauty competitions. You compared a lot of them, many of them on TV.
I did.
David's Daily Dolly.
In effect, we had a woman who starred every day. And people, hard for you to believe this now, Sean, but women actually queued up to be David's Daily Dolly.
It is a little hard for me to believe. What about David Hamilton Makes Your Day?
David Hamilton Makes Your Day. I think that was the idea of Doreen Davis, who was a wonderful leader, wonderful woman to work with. And I think almost the first producer I ever worked with at Radio 1. She was an absolute joy. And every day we would talk to a woman who was celebrating her wedding anniversary or her birthday. Ahead of the chat on the air, she would be sent a bouquet of flowers. And always at the end of the interview or during the interview, they would say, oh, thank you for the lovely flowers.
That was
David.
It, yeah. Thank and you it, for the lovely it, flowers. Because you'd have T-shirts saying it as well, wouldn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, it became actually a catchphrase. And I went to see the Doobie Brothers at the Rainbow Finsbury Park, and a bunch of hairy rockers turning up for the show looked across at me and went, thank you for the lovely flowers, David.
A beautiful stretch of the country this really is. We started the Radio 1 Roadshow on Monday in Tenby in South Wales. This morning we were in Weston-super-Mare, and this afternoon we're making our way down to Ilfracombe. We'll be there tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock on the West Promenade. If you're around that particular part of the country, drop in and see us. If you're not, tune in to 247 tomorrow morning at 11 o'clock for the Radio 1 Roadshow live from the West Promenade in Ilfracombe.
Off the back of Radio 1's enormous popularity at this time, you were entertaining the masses on the Radio 1 Roadshow, which was a brand new thing, of course, in those days. It only started in 73, not long after you began your daily programme. How much did you enjoy that?
I love doing the roadshows. I mean, going up, working to audiences and, thousands of people on a beach, in effect, just watching a DJ playing records and a few silly games like Spot the Mileage with Smiley Miley and Bits and Pieces. And there were enormous crowds there, and particularly when the weather was good, travelling around the seaside resorts was fabulous. Of course, we did some that were not seaside resorts. One of the famous or infamous ones that I did was the one from Mallory Park, which I compared with Annie Nightingale. The guests were the Bay City Rollers. And, of course, Roller Mania was the big thing at the time, and they were absolutely swamped and besieged by their fans. So to get away from them, they jumped onto a boat on the lake, and all their fans jumped in fully clothed and swam after them.
I mean, you can see the video clips now, of course, wading through the water and Tony Blackburn on a speedboat with a womble.
Totally unaware of the whole thing.
It's quite surreal, isn't it, looking back? The 18th of May, 1975. Let's have a listen to a couple of highlights from that right now.
Radio 1 on the road.
In the summertime, here on Radio 1, David Hamilton brings you so much fun. From 3 till 5, special guests and special groups to blow your mind. Here at Mallory Park, David Hamilton on Super Radio 1.
Thank you very much indeed. Welcome to the Radio 1 Fun Day Out from a very congested Mallory Park.
We have the most amazing scenes going on here this afternoon, as you can no doubt hear, partly going on behind us since the rollers have been here. We have a little river surrounding, two various parts of the track here, and the girls are actually swimming across the river to try and get at their idols. In the meantime, their idols are trying to get away.
All these years on, when you listen to that, It must bring it vividly back to life for you.
It does. And, you know, I think what people nowadays, perhaps because it is a while ago, don't realise just what a huge station Radio 1 was. You've got to remember that in the first 6 years, there was no other radio station apart from Radio Luxembourg with its slightly dodgy signal at night. And so everybody listened to Radio 1. And that was like how it was when I began in June 1973. Later on, of course, commercial stations mushroomed around the country, and they were run by businessmen who had to make sure that they were getting plenty of listeners. So we were up against it, and they had the advantage of being able to do local news, local sport, local weather. And particularly, say, for example, in Scotland, where they were fed up with DJs mispronouncing the names of the places where they lived and also talking about the lovely sunny weather when it was pouring with rain, perhaps in Scotland. But those were the, as I say in my book, which I bought you a copy of my book, the golden days of Radio 1. The real golden days were probably the first 6 or 7 years when there was virtually no competition at all. And audiences were enormous. They were, you know, 17, 18, 19 million, depending on which newspaper you read. The other thing was, Sean, that at that particular time, unlike today, pop music appealed to all members of the family. The same people who would sit around the television watching Top of the Pops listened to Radio 1. And so you had music that appealed to everybody from grandparents through to grandchildren. And when we went around the country doing our appearances, either, you know, the Radio 1 road shows or perhaps doing our gigs or opening supermarkets or something like that, loads of people would come up and say, I heard you say so-and-so today and heard you. So there will never be audiences as big as that again, because there is now so much more choice. There are so many radio stations now, which in a way is a good thing. But for the people who were broadcasting then, they were the golden days.
Well, let's have a word with Woody about the tour, because we've been touring around the country. I've been comparing some of the gigs. In fact, we were down in Bournemouth last night, and it really has been a fantastic tour, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been really great so far.
You had a great relationship with the Bay City Rollers, because you went out on tour with them as well, didn't you?
I did. I compared the Rollers UK tour. I also compared David Cassidy's UK tour. And I like David Cassidy. He was a very, very nice guy. But what he hated was the teenagers screaming, because he was a good singer and he wanted them to hear him sing. So what he did, he put cotton wool in his ears so he couldn't hear the screams. Then, unfortunately, he couldn't hear the band. So it was kind of no-win situation.
Hello, good evening. Welcome once again to Top of the Pops.
Then at the beginning of 1976, finally, you were given that golden ticket, that chance to host Top of the Pops for the very first time, because it took a while to happen, didn't it?
Well, I was working as an announcer for Thames Television, and under the deal of my terms of my contract, I wasn't able to do it. So, I had to wait a couple of years, but it was something that I really wanted to do.
It's the cherry on the cake, isn't it?
The first thing that struck me about Top of the Pops was how small the studio was. With clever direction, it was made to look much bigger. But there were about 100 teenagers who were ushered from one set to another. So they would be over on this set here looking at David Essex, and then suddenly they'd be ushered across to the other set and they'd be looking at Rod Stewart. And so it was not as big as it looked. But it was just such a big show to do, and I'm so glad I did it.
For about the last 3 years, this particular programme has been heard on Radio 1 and on Radio 2. That originally was an economy measure, because the corresponding programme on Radio 2 disappeared, and we sort of swallowed it up here on Radio 1. Well, a little bit later on in the year, the BBC, which is now flushed with pride and a little bit of money, will be splitting the networks, which means that we'll be getting a different programme in the afternoon on Radio 1 from the programme on Radio 2. Now, whether or not this particular show you'll be able to hear on Radio 1 or Radio 2, you will have to wait for that to be announced. But some of you will be very, very happy about that, and some of you may be a little sadder. But whatever happens, you should be able to get the David Hamilton show somewhere in the afternoon. It could be on Radio 5, of course. But
let's talk about that time when your afternoon show, after being heard for a couple of years on both Radios 1 and Radio 2. The decision was made to divide the networks again, 1977. And let's be honest about it. You've been, you know, you've always said this to me in other conversations. It was not a decision that you were very happy with, naturally, at the time.
Well, at that particular time, Radio 2 was a very middle-of-the-road station, and Radio 1 was the place that to be and the place that I had wanted to be for a long time. And I thought everything was going very well. You know, my show had terrific listening figures. I had been doing Top of the Pops, Seaside Special, doing lots of gigs, lots of other television work, working with Tommy Cooper and a series at Thames. I had a very high profile. And the BBC got the money back and decided they were going to split the networks and decided that they would put Tony Blackburn on Radio 1 at the same time as me, which seemed to both of us a very silly thing to do, because not only were we good friends, but we had basically the same kind of audience. And so I went very reluctantly to Radio 2.
Yes, sir.
That's Baccarat. And yes, sir, I can boogie. Just before I do boogie off, there are one or two people that I would like to say thank you to. I'd like to thank in particular Paul Williams, that man ahead of his time, who has produced the programme all the time that I've been doing it. All I can tell you is that everybody that he's ever worked with on Radio 1 has finished up on Radio 2, so I'd like to tell Tony Blackburn that, so that he's duly warned. But above all, we'd like to thank you very much indeed for listening, because without you, there wouldn't be any shows anyway. So we're going to leave you with this one, and I'll see you again on the other side in a couple of weeks' time. Bye-bye.
My last record, Neil Sedaka and our last song together, summed up perfectly how I felt. I was very, very, very upset. But I worked with some very nice people at Radio 2, and so, you know, life goes on. But I think it is the nature of the beast. Radio 1 is always changing, and newer, younger people will come in all the time. And I had to accept the fact that I was probably my late 30s, which is not that old in retrospect, but perhaps, you know, they had people waiting in the wings that they wanted to bring in. And that's how it goes.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the brand new David Hamilton Show. Yes, indeed. A new look, David Hamilton Show. And for the very first time, this will be a Radio 2 production.
And you've captured many of the memories in your book, The Golden Days of Radio 1, Hot Shots, Big Shots and Pot Shots, which I've not read yet, but he's brought a copy in. He's put a little message in it. Shall I read it?
Yes, do.
He says, Sean,
enjoy and read between the lines.
Yes, yes.
I'll tell you what happened, Sean. A journalist came to see me at my house in Sussex and interviewed me about a book he was going to write about Radio 1. And we spent 2 or 3 hours together. It was over a year, maybe a couple of years before the anniversary, and that's obviously what it was going to be about. A year before the anniversary happened, I heard that that book was not coming out, and I thought, oh, that's a great shame. So I thought to myself, well, why don't I write one? So very quickly, very hurriedly, I wrote one. And somebody came up with, I think it's my friend Junior Campbell, actually, is an old pal of mine from Marmalade, who came up with the subtitle. He said, you need a subtitle. I think he came up with Hot Shots, Big Shots and Pot Shots. But yeah, there's a chapter about each of the DJs that I work with. There's a picture of us on the
That's
cover.
That's a great photo on the front. We should mention that. It is, well, it's most, if not all, of the Radio 1 lineup. Looking at it, the very early 1970s, you've got old Ed with you there, the likes of Roscoe, Noel Edmonds, Alan Freeman, I can see Annie Nightingale, Tony stretching over a turntable. I mean, the engineers must have gone mad. There's Johnny Walker there, and two all-time greats also, like Ed, much missed John Peel and Terry Wogan. What a lineup, David.
Well, there were 11. I call them in the book the Radio 1 First 11. I was very proud and very happy to be part of that team, and every one of them was a household name. I mean, you would never get again a lineup of people like that on any radio station in this country. So back to that phrase again, you know, it was the golden age.
David Hamilton, thank you so much for sharing your Radio 1 with me, and as ever, it's always lovely to see you, DH.
Sean, it's been a pleasure, and enjoy the book.